Yeah, I don't know what's happening with Taj.
I'm green.
Yeah, you're like really pixelated.
Am I still green?
She's been sucked into the Matrix.
Oh, there she is. Back.
G'day, it's Peter, and welcome to Office Anywhere, a podcast about working and living on your terms, whether that's cutting code on the deck of a Balinese villa, crafting ad copy from a cafe in Portland, Oregon, or building websites from a home office in Melbourne, Australia. To learn more about Office Anywhere, just go to officeanywhere.co.
My goal with Office Anywhere has always been to show you the many benefits of working remotely, particularly for employees, but also for employers. Over the last couple of weeks, many people have been forced into a situation where it's no longer a question of, can I work remotely, but I must work remotely. So the conversation has changed a little bit to one of, how do I succeed as a remote worker, and what opportunities does this present to me? Well, over the last few weeks, I've been chatting to leaders of remote work businesses and businesses that hire or that employ remote teams around the world to find out how they've been effective as businesses with remote workforces, and also what sort of tools and practices they've used to help them succeed in a remote environment. Well, today's conversation is a little bit different, and I'm actually quite excited about today's conversation because I did a workshop with these girls, Tash and Viv of Ace the Gram, about a week and a half ago, and it was absolutely brilliant. And it was one of the first ones that they've ever run remotely because they normally do them on site together with their students. I learned so much in that workshop and made a ton of notes, and am about to transform the way I engage with Instagram. So today we're going to be learning from Tash and Viv about the ways that businesses in particular and creatives and entrepreneurs can truly understand how Instagram works, how to attract the audience to the material that they produce, how to find the right audience, and how to amplify their message without a whole bunch of confusing technobabble. So one thing I've noticed with Tash and Viv is it's very clear that they have develop the knowledge that they have through applying principles to their own businesses, because they were both entrepreneurs in their own right before they started teaching others how to be effective on Instagram. And that shows. It shows in the principles that they teach and the methods that they recommend. So coming at you this time from Mount Maunganui in the South Island of New Zealand, which is one of the most beautiful places in the world. There's no doubt about it. I've been to New Zealand a couple of times and I'm desperately keen to go back there again. Unfortunately, at the moment, it's not possible to go anywhere, but it's going to be high on my list of destinations once travel restrictions are lifted. So let's get into it and welcome Tash and Viv from Ace the Gram. So Ace the Gram came about through the lessons learned building your own businesses in art and sportswear. So maybe one at a time, you could give us a bit of a background on all of that. I'd be interested to know about that, how that all started.
Yeah. I think we came to Instagram from different backgrounds, I guess. Viv and I we actually met when we were at Otago Uni, which is a university in the bottom of the South Island in New Zealand, and I had started an Instagram account to showcase my art and photography and recipes to, I guess, put myself in a different category when I was approaching job opportunities, so that I could kind of say, these are my skills, this is what I can do, this is, you know, something tangible that I could show. And Viv had started Viv, you can talk about your experience starting with Instagram marketing.
Yeah, sure. So mine was slightly different. Tash definitely has more of the influencer side of things. And then for me, it was about, I actually found some tights that I really liked on Instagram that was sort of activewear, and I could only buy 12 pairs and they were from Columbia. I thought I was actually going to get scammed at the very beginning, but anyway, I thought, oh well, I can sell 12 pairs of tights, I'll just get 12 anyway. And then so sort of became Vivid Sportswear, and because I was at uni at the time with sort of limited funds, Facebook ads worked well, they were all right, but for me Instagram only took my time, it only cost me my time, of which I had quite a bit, and I was very flexible. So it just ended up with me doing a lot of testing, figuring out what sort of worked, and then, you know, driving the majority of traffic from Instagram to my website to make sales. So a little bit of a different backstory from Tash, but I think, like we talked about in the workshop, Peter, it means that we kind of come at different campaigns and stuff with two different perspectives that make us quite strong and well-balanced when it comes to working with both brands and influencers.
And the good thing about the way you've come to Instagram is that you've come to it as practitioners who've applied things that you've learned over time and refined over time in your own businesses. And I'm sure that's quite different to a lot of supposed experts out there. I was having a chat with someone yesterday about this, how I've been promoting the value of working remotely for quite a long time for both employers and employees. And now that everybody's been forced to do it, you know, there are a million experts on it who have binge read and binge watched material on how to do it effectively, and now they're experts. And it's definitely the same with social. There are a ton of supposed experts out there. But, you know, as Gary Vaynerchuk always says, he's a practitioner. You know, he teaches what he applies, and he recommends what he's experimented with, and you girls are the same. So it's refreshing to see it, and I think it's still pretty rare that you get genuine practitioners who've, you know, gone down the road, done the hard work to actually prove that something works. I could tell that straight away when we were doing our course the other day, that it was the stuff that you were teaching was based on experience. You can tell in the language. You can tell the way you, how confident you are with what you're teaching and how you respond to questions. So I applaud you for that. I think it's pretty rare. So tell me then, what exactly is Ace the Gram? Who is it for and what is it for?
Great question. Ace the Gram is an Instagram specialist company. So we specialize in Instagram marketing. So either helping businesses get on board Instagram and set up their Instagrams and create it as a viable marketing platform for them to reach their target audience and spread their messages and then ideally convert them at the end. And we also specialize in more high-level campaigns. So whether it's running an influencer marketing campaign with a company or talking them through the ins and outs of the way the industry works so that we can help them optimize their current Instagram marketing to actually convert and get the results that they have as their KPIs and their goals, because it is, you know, a bit of a minefield if you haven't had a lot of experience in it. And so Instagram is for, you know, marketing managers and business owners and creatives who want to amplify their message or their service or their business using Instagram. It's a great traffic driver. So it's basically the way that we can capture our target audience initially so that we can then send them off to wherever it is that we're wanting to send them.
Mm-hmm. I remember you mentioning this in the course too, that and I'm a firm believer in this with my limited experience, that social platforms aren't the final destination, and they usually shouldn't be, because A, you can't control them, and you have limited ability to interact with them beyond the constraints of the platform, that you should always be sending them somewhere else where you do have the control. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think we were having a similar conversation this morning, and we were sort of talking about, well, you know, you have to understand what your customer journey looks like and where you actually want to direct people. Because I suppose if we look at the sort of sales funnel model where we have, we want to get as many of our target audience connecting with us at the top of that funnel as possible. And as we work down that funnel, the next steps may be, okay, well, we want them to then click to my website and sign up to my list, and then from my list I'm going to do a bit of a nurture sequence and eventually they'll purchase, or, you know, maybe I do a sale and they skip right to the conversion. So you've got to understand what that looks like for your business, and, you know, make sure every one of those steps is, I suppose, you're paying attention to them and that they're optimized. So where Instagram often comes in is in that very top step where we're trying to get in front of, you know, with a billion monthly active users, there's a lot of people on Instagram. You know, even if your target market is in 50 plus, there's still a lot of people on Instagram that fall within that kind of age range. So think about, okay, if I want to get as many people as possible at the top of the funnel and I'm going to use Instagram to do that, what then do you have to do to get them to take the next step? So I know we talk a little bit about, you know, making an email list. That's a really strong kind of tool that you can use to then, you know, touch up again with another email, get another touch point in with your audience. Is it that you want to get them to click over, check something out, so you retarget them with Facebook ads? What does that whole kind of marketing mix look like for your business? Because it's never just as simple as posting a picture and then getting a sale straight away. You know, that might happen, but there's a lot more that comes into that. And if you really want to build the business as a whole, you've got to understand how it's all working.
So true. Yeah, things are never quite as simple as you want them to be, and never work as quickly as you want them to, do they?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what field you're playing in, there's always a lot more work than you wish there was, but the ones who have a strategy, a proven strategy for doing it, they're the ones that come out successful at the end of it, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm curious to know, why is Instagram so important now compared to, say, Facebook? So that's, I guess, a two-part question. Why is it so important compared to Facebook? And how is it now becoming more relevant for businesses who might have otherwise, you know, gotten in front of their audience a different way?
I think what we've seen with social platforms is a lot of them, you know, we're still super lucky because social media platforms as a whole are a lot cheaper. They're a cheaper form of marketing than traditional print or radio or TV. But platforms are starting to monetize. So we saw Facebook change to a more pay-to-play model a few years ago. And basically to get in front of that page-like audience now on your business Facebook account, you have to pay. And Facebook ads are super sophisticated and they're an amazing opportunity, but it is a paid strategy. Whereas the beauty of Instagram is a personal account has exactly the same algorithmic weighting to a personal account. So you can be shown to exactly however many people you want to target, like you would with a personal account, and you're not devalued because you're a business. So Instagram's, you know, a visual platform, so a picture speaks 1,000 words and you can show so much of your business and that whole story of what your USP is and what sets you apart from other competitors in your field, and you can show the behind the scenes and the inside into your business, unlike so many other platforms. And it's still probably one of the best platforms to connect with that target audience. So if you're, you know, doing a story about your business or what's happening in the factory that day or what's happening at your personal office that day, then people can reply directly to that story, and that's a direct conversation you can have with your customers. So that's why we're finding Instagram is such a powerful selling platform. And with the change in user behavior over the last few years, we have seen it change from more of an entertainment base to more of a tool where people are actively searching for products or services, which means for businesses, that's great because that's such an opportunity to, if we can put our best foot forwards, then that's a great way for our target customers to see who we are and maybe choose us to engage with.
So the landscape has changed a bit. Was chatting with a fellow called Matt Barnett the other day, who's the founder and CEO of a company called Bonjoro, which is a brilliant little app where you can engage with your customers as they sign up for whatever platform it is that you're on, say, you know, through ConvertKit, for example, or MailChimp, and that feeds the data into their app and says, okay, you've got these three new leads or these three new signups, whatever, send them a quick video, and you can pull up the app on your phone. You can say, hi, it's Peter from Office Anywhere. Just want to say thanks for signing up, blah, 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 blah. And it's really personal. It's a really nice way of connecting. But they actually developed this as a B2B solution because they were a high-end ad agency or digital agency in Sydney with clients all over New York, London, Paris, this kind of thing. And so they knew that they had to get in front of these people to have real influence over, you know, potential opportunities. So as he went to work each day, he would get on the ferry on Sydney Harbour and he would film them with his smartphone with the Sydney Opera House behind the Sydney Harbour Bridge, and he'd say, hey, it's Matt here from Bonjoro, just da-da-da-da-da-da. It wasn't Bonjoro then because it was their ad agency. And he said that the idea behind this, I'm going to get to a question eventually, I promise. The idea behind this was that he was treating their B2B business as B2C. So they would take what traditionally in a B2B environment would be a long and convoluted process of engaging with a prospect through written form and all this sort of stuff and proposals and whatever, and just make it pure B2C. It's like, hi, it's me. I'm a human being. Here's where I am. Here's what we can do. I'd love to connect with you. I'm going to be in London in 4 weeks. Can I drop by and say hi and show you what we can do? And it resonated so well with them that business boomed. So my question is, Now that so many businesses are using Instagram to engage with their audience and to capture leads at the top of the funnel, do you find that they're engaging with their audience in very much the same way that consumers, you know, and solopreneurs and creatives have been engaging with theirs? Or do businesses need to take a very different approach on Instagram?
That's a really interesting question. I love that example. That's such a good example that I'm going to write down. But it's funny you say that, because I think we went through a real phase with Instagram where we became quite used to backyard brands. Like, people were very much used to seeing like the faces behind businesses, especially on stories, because with that, you know, that the gap is so much smaller in terms of, you know, we sort of went from a place where a business was very far away, Facebook ability to message them, and now we're getting these like live updates of everything that's happening. So in a way, it's become a lot easier to like reach out and connect with those people. But at the same time, we are seeing a trend with businesses going more from sort of backyard brands like homemade photography back to a place of really professional, slick content and stuff, because it sets them, because so many people are doing that, and it's so easy to start a business or get up and running and take some pictures on your iPhone. It is now starting to set these businesses and these brands apart by doing like more of a slick and finished feed. But again, with that being said, in terms of contacting, you know, someone at the company or getting your questions answered, that's still totally accessible. And I don't think we've really seen that before, unless it was like a brick and mortar store where you could walk inside and say hello. We haven't really seen that at a global scale before.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess it's like every environment, it evolves, doesn't it, over time? And what starts out as being we're scrappy is acceptable and even endearing. Over time, people get more sophisticated and more professional with the content they produce, and so people's expectations go up. And I guess that, you know, it still has a potential to go full circle, where people say, well, hang on a minute, wasn't this all supposed to be just human to human and flawed and, you know, sort of authentic and down to earth? And now it's looking like TV ads, you know, and then they gravitate back again towards the people who are raw and down to earth and straightforward, you know. So I guess it's interesting. Everything goes in waves, doesn't it? And you just need to be aware of where it is at the time and adapt to that and work with it. So are you seeing a surge in Instagram engagement now from businesses and creatives because people are stuck at home? Are they sort of turning their attention back to it and going, now I have to up my game?
Yeah. I think there's an 11% increase in engagement currently, which is, you know, really interesting, but there's also an 83% rise in people using all their apps and being online. So that's a huge influx of people using their technology. Interestingly, I was reading a study yesterday, and it was about how, you know, we're all so mobile focused at the moment, but because everyone's in lockdown, they're actually going back to their desktops. So they're a lot of their things that they're doing. So, you know, Zoom or Facebook or, you know, Facebook Messenger, all these different apps, they're actually gone. The stats are like this for the, like, as an extremely steep incline for those using desktops again, just because everyone's at home. But yeah, I think there's, as I was saying before, there has been a decrease of like steadily over the last couple of years of people actively liking and following on Instagram. But I think at the moment, because that's solely the thing that people have got to do, then we have seen a bit of an increase in that. And it's definitely a good time to be on social. And we were talking about this on one of our podcasts the other day. Even if you can't be selling right now, it's such a good opportunity to still build that connection and that rapport with your audience via other means. So whether that's, you know, little cooking series or taking people back through memory lane of, you know, those, if your business is slick and professional now, showing those old posts of how you began and your origin story and your core story, and just tilting your content now to suit, you know, to be what's appropriate for the current situation and to connect with people in a different way, because it's not necessarily about hard selling at the moment.
So true. I do ads for a software company, and we have a spot with an industry publication that goes out to about 130,000 people in the industry every week. So we have, you know, 50 odd spots to fill. And I just submitted a whole batch of ads for them 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And a few days ago, I had to pull them all and redo them all because, you know, the messaging could come across as tone deaf given the current situation. So they all had to be tweaked and finessed and a couple of new ads put together to, you know, to really fit in with what's going on. Tell me, we touched on this a minute ago, that there's always the risk with any platform that rules can change, you know, algorithms change. And overnight, there have been instances where people's, you know, business, if you can call it that, has kind of evaporated because they're no longer getting in front of them. And you mentioned pay to play, Tush. You know, there have been changes on Facebook which have had a dramatic effect on people's livelihood. So how should people be using Instagram or indeed any social platform to prevent that from happening to them?
Yeah, I think it does come back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, having that in mind that if you look at, you know, if you look at people that were really Facebook heavy quite early on, they all found it very easy to grow. And then, like you say, just basically overnight, they totally changed how pages and content were shown in the Facebook algorithm. So, or in the newsfeed. So for a lot of people that meant, you know, like what drop in engagement would the, you know, how, what would that look like in terms of an effect on your business in terms of sales? Like it can be quite a scary thing if you're relying on, like a lot of businesses are and do rely on Instagram as a whole, to make sales and like fund their lifestyle. So one thing that we do have to take into account then, you know, is building up those touch points in terms of, okay, well, how can I get people down that sales funnel? How can I get them clicking onto my website so I can save them as a custom audience? How can I, you know, if I get them on my email list, you know, data that I own, then I can email them however many times I like. I can get really entertained. I can send them, you know, nurture sequences to build trust and help them like understand and love the brand. So there's a lot more than that we can do to build up those touch points, of which we may need, you know, at least 5 to 12 touch points before we actually pull someone down the next level of our sales funnel. So we always talk about how you can get that person to take the next step, and hopefully that next step means you kind of owning that traffic. So if something were to happen, you know, even if Instagram doesn't necessarily die, the ad spend required to reach the same amount of people might be quite a lot, which would then cut in your margin into your margins, as an example. So it's just thinking about it more strategically, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, my wife has run a successful eBay business for, close to 10 years now. I think actually it's just over 10 years. And, you know, eBay, of course, now is full of major brands who are promoting their products on there to get people into their ecosystem, to get into their own ecosystem, i.e. an email list, so that then they can promote to them directly. And you know, a lot of the stuff that I buy, of course, comes in with a card, you know, thanks for buying, leave us a, you know, 5-star review, and next time you buy from us, go directly to our website, get 5% off. So I guess it's the same deal with social, isn't it, is that we want to get out there in front of the right people, but we don't want the platform that we're relying on to capture these people to pay us in the future and to continue to allow us, to give us permission to talk to those people. As Seth Godin, you know, says that marketing, a huge part of marketing, of course, is getting permission from people to talk to them, you know, and to share what you have with them. And if that permission is controlled by a gatekeeper, you know, the size of Facebook/Instagram, well, then that's a risky proposition, isn't it? Because things could change very quickly overnight. So I'm curious also to know, and I know we've talked about this a bit in the workshop and I found it so valuable, especially this, how does Instagram decide what posts to show to whom, and how can we as business owners influence Instagram to send the right people to our content?
Good question. Sorry, Viv, I thought you were going to answer that. I was looking at her face yet.
I thought I answered the last one, so I'd give you this.
I know. We're still getting used to this different location situation. Great question. For the algorithm, the way that we can put our best foot forward on Instagram is to tell Instagram with our data who we want to target so that they'll show us to the right person. So I think we mentioned earlier, you know, Instagram doesn't favor one person or one account over another account. It has no personal interest in the matter. All it does is read the data that it gets given from us with our actions, and then it actions that by using that data to show us to users who it thinks will be interested in our content. And that's just for them to provide the best user experience so that people stay on the platform for longer. So if us as, you know, a business account who wants to get in front of our target audience, if we can think, with what data can we use to tell Instagram in its own language who we want to target? So that's, what are we posting in our photos? What will their image recognition software actually pick up? What are we hashtagging? Like, how are we telling the algorithm who it is that's not only in our niche but also in our location, and what are we hashtagging to tell the algorithm who we are? What locations are we using? Who are we following and who is following us? And what content are we actually engaging with? So what are we liking and following and searching on Instagram? So if we can be really clear cut with all those different action opportunities that we have, then that'll make it super easy for Instagram to decide who we are and then therefore show us to the right people.
That is so valuable, because I think a lot of people think that it's just a bunch of throwing a bunch of hashtags at it and then that's it. But, you know, you mentioned the image recognition software as well, and I'm sure a lot of people aren't aware of this, especially people who haven't been around Instagram for very long or social for very long, that it has become that sophisticated where it can actually determine what is likely to be the thing that's in that photograph, and then comparing that with what other people in Instagram like looking at themselves and then showing them yours, you know. But also, you know, monitoring who you like and who you follow and, you know, which posts you look at to determine where does this person fit into the ecosystem. So I guess it's like if you were promoting dog beds, for example, you made custom dog beds, you know, you're not going to do yourself any favors if all you do is look at photos of mountain scenery in Bali.
Yeah.
Because that's going to just create confusion, isn't it? Instagram algorithm's going to think, hang on a minute, this person posts stuff about dog beds, but they're always looking at Bali scenes.
Yeah, so I couldn't confusion. Agree more.
So that's really, really useful. And I remember during the workshop, I learned a ton of lessons and I'm glad I wrote them down. But two that really stuck with me were around content pillars and developing the right hashtags to fit in with those content pillars. Can you tell us a couple of principles around that topic?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose where we kind of come from in terms of content pillars, and when we use that term, we're sort of referring to, when we're on Instagram, the first thing we need to figure out is, okay, well, you know, what am I trying to use it for? If we can understand where Instagram fits into that customer journey, we probably also then have an idea of what our target customer wants to see from us. So what is it about the product that actually makes our customer excited, leaves a long-standing impression? What do they get excited about? What do they actually want to see from us and want to engage with? And also what will make them convert to the next step? So you may find you want to post pictures of you may find if you just all you did was post reposts, you might get heaps of followers, but you may not get many clicks through your website. Whereas if you maybe posted pictures of your product alone, if you posted product in use, so maybe there were some recipes there that people could take advantage of. Maybe you then also posted some testimonials, so that in terms of that customer journey, say someone was clicking over to have a little bit of a stalk of your product page, they might think, oh yeah, I'm kind of interested in this, this is really useful, I see I can use it in these different ways, but also, oh wow, it's really helped these other people that I can relate to, so that's actually going to get me to take the next step. So the content pillars just refer to what are, say, like the three or four different types of content that we can show to our audience that we know will either kind of drag them in for engagement, or it'll get them over the line when they're thinking about the sale. And we want to keep them kind of entertained. We want to show them a lot of value. And with that, you'll probably find that from those different content pillars, there may be a couple of different hashtag sets that you can use. So you may find that maybe one of your content pillars is really location specific. So you might want to use some really location specific hashtags in one area. And then say if you're selling your dog beds, you might have some really if you were posting cat and dog beds, you would have some like cat specific tags and some dog specific tags. So from your content pillars, it's really important, like we've talked about already, to then take into account that yes, Instagram's going to be able to tell what's in my photo, and I want to further solidify that by showing them with my actions, showing them with my hashtags, so that if I do post the picture of the cat, I'm also going to post the hashtags with the cat hashtags, you know, hashtag cat lover, whatever you can find. And it'll just mean that, you know, it all comes back to then by providing value, Instagram's going to think, perfect, I know exactly where you fit in. I know that this person's also interested in cats, so I'm going to show them that piece of content. And that's where we see that engagement. That's where we get those people clicking over to our profile and through our website and making sales.
Brilliant, brilliant. And this is so much better than the shotgun approach, actually taking an intelligent, strategic approach and segmenting what it is that you post about and then making sure your actions and your hashtags and everything reflect that. That's one of the first things I did after we got off the workshop call was I sat down and I put together my content pillars, hashtags to go with that. I did my hashtag research the way you taught me by searching for things that are what a human being I thought would be searching for on Instagram and then seeing the other hashtags that come up and seeing how many posts there are with that hashtag and that sort of stuff. And it's so useful. It's so much better to actually have some kind of plan for how to do something because I guess it's like any gold rush era. There is so much opportunity, but you can become overwhelmed very quickly and disillusioned when you just stab in the dark and things don't work. And it kind of makes it even worse because you know the opportunity is big, but you just can't figure out how to make it work. So it's like you're surrounded by gold, but you don't know how to pick it up. But having this kind of very strategic approach that's not complicated, but if you don't know it, you'll be lost. It makes all the difference and it takes all the stress away as well. That's one thing I found after I finished the workshop with you girls. Straight away I thought, at last, you know, I've read so much on this subject, but at last I have a very, very clear view of what I need to focus on, what I can forget and why the things I need to focus on are important. It was brilliant. I can't rave about your course enough, your workshop enough. I sound like a gushing fanboy, don't I?
No, I love it. I suppose that is the big, you know, that's a massive challenge though, is that we with the internet have all the information we can ever dream of at our fingertips. It's actually a matter of how do you sift through the information, and it's not until you've actually tried that totally. Out and experimented yourself, you know, after 6 months that you figure out, probably not the, you know, best strategy for me, or, you know, like, actually, that was awesome. Why didn't I do this a year ago? So that's probably the biggest advantage.
And also with all these, you know, digital marketing experts online and things, delving deeper into the subject can actually make you more confused because there might be some,
yes.
you know, they'll get the essence of something and then some blogger will write about how there's a new thing called shadow banning and then all about shadow banning and what it is. And then someone will be weighing in on it about like comment pods and it can just confuse you a lot more. So we just think of it like,
totally.
You know, cut through everything, figure out what your intention is, figure out, like just know the way that the algorithm actually is going to read your content so that you can reach the right people. And then, like, you know, don't worry about all of these, all of the noise and all of the things that come with social. Just know your strategy, know your intention, and just stick to your own guns.
Yep, yep. I couldn't agree more. I've been on the internet since 96 and I know what information overload is all about, and I know what it's like to overconsume on a topic and then you just become so overwhelmed that you do nothing.
Yeah.
Which is just a horrible waste. And, you know, in the last 2 years, I've changed my approach completely where I'll say, okay, who is the best that I can find that I believe in this topic? And if I have to, I'll go and spend $2,000 to learn off them. Yep. You know, I did that with Marie Forleo. I did that with Amy Porterfield.
Yeah.
I've done that with a bunch of other people. Who is the best? Who do I relate to? Just pay them and learn from their 5-10 years of experience. And I've never regretted it. Every time I've done it, I've not regretted it because it cuts out all that crap and all that noise. Immediately your anxiety goes down. You can just sort of clear your mind and go, okay, now I'm going to learn from an expert. Forget what I've read 1,000 times before. Let's just listen to them, you know. And it really, really pays off. So tell me, with so many people now working from home, and they have a bit more time on their hands because they're not getting in the commute every day. I mean, I save 500 hours a year by not commuting. It's huge because it's usually an hour there and an hour back, often more. So, you know, I stopped commuting a long time ago, but on the odd times I go into the office, that's how long it takes. So a lot of people have a lot more spare time now in the mornings and probably in the afternoons. So what kind of opportunities does this present to them, you think, from the perspective of social and particularly Instagram?
Yeah, I think what it opens up is that time for you know, space in your mind for creativity and how you can think of these more out-of-the-box strategies to reach your target audience. And also it can make it fun again. You know, when social is the last thing on our list, it's stressful. We know we've got to do it. We bang out a post, but we know it's a bit half-hearted. That's when we don't create that connection. And I think what a little bit of time and space has is what we're seeing on social now is, you know, companies coming up with these incredible, engaging, you know, funny challenges that people are doing during quarantine, or cooking series that suddenly their engagement's gone crazy, even though they can't sell, but they're doing little, you know, there was a company called Flight Coffee, and because people can't buy their coffee right now in store, they're doing morning coffee sessions with their audience and like giving them all the tips and tricks to make the coffee better, and they all have coffee together. I think it just...
How cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I think, you know, going for walks instead of being stuck in the car and listening to podcasts and scrolling your feed in a more open way of figuring out, instead of just scrolling mindlessly while you're sitting in traffic, which you shouldn't be doing anyway. But it's no. about, you know, engaging with that content in the way of with an open mind about what's creative, what's interesting, what's inspiring, and then you can apply that to your own world.
Yep, yep. Oh, that's a really good approach. You know, I wasn't even thinking along those lines, but that's a really good answer, because I was thinking, you know, and I'm sure this is equally true, that having that time allows you to now finally put together a strategy, you know, based on the kinds of things that you girls teach. But you're so right that when you have a little bit more free time, then you have headspace. You can actually be more creative and you can think more clearly, and you're not just trying to plug little holes in your schedule with, I've got to do this and I've got to do that, and then you just do a crap job of it because you're just not inspired at all. So that's a really good point. You know, I was also thinking, I don't know whether I should do this. It's probably premature. I was just thinking I'd like to get some kind of image of the three of us here, whether it's just a screenshot or it's a video shot or something of us on this call, because it's really kind of smooth and it's working now.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, shit, I wasn't looking at the camera. Now I've got to do one. I was looking at my damn bloody mouse. All right, ready, steady, groovy. Oh, that looks cool. I like that.
Perfect.
All right.
Nice.
Okay, so a couple more questions if I can, if you've got time for, say, another 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, cool. One thing I wanted to ask you was, and you just mentioned it there, how sometimes, you know, you just know you've got to do a post. And I have this problem sometimes too, because my normal work is so crazy at the moment, is I think, shit, I've got to publish my next blog post, and I've got to do the, you know, the podcast, and I've got to do all the other stuff around it, and then social, and then ConvertKit. And it just gets overwhelming sometimes when you're just trying to fit all these tasks into your little bits of open schedule. So I'm curious to know, how do you girls decide what to say no to? Because I think saying no to the right stuff is so important, probably more important than knowing what to say yes to. So how do you decide what you're going to say no to?
Yeah, this has been I think this has been something we've learnt over our, you know, 4-year business journey of Ace the Gram. And it's just, once you, it's sort of like having a map, right? If you know where you're going, you have a destination point and you have a map, then you can follow that map and you get to your destination. But if you don't actually have a destination in mind, then you'll just go to all these different locations and not actually ever get to that end destination because you don't know where you're going. So I think it all comes back to that planning and figuring out where you're wanting to be heading with your business, and then therefore it'll be really clear what aligns and what doesn't align. Because I think, you know, we've definitely, as we've wavered in our what our goals are and our specific intention are, that's the times that we've maybe bought on things or done things that didn't align necessarily with a final destination that was where we were heading. So yeah, it's definitely been a learning process.
What about you, Viv?
No, I was going to say the exact same thing. You've got to know where you're going first to, you know, figure out what are good goods and bads. And, you know, like some things are, yeah, I mean, some things are just sort of sacrifices, and then other things are, you know, straight up no's if they're not going to get you any closer. And often you'll know, you know, often you'll know based on your sort of gut instinct whether it's a yes or a no, but I suppose those goals are ultimately the thing that decides your direction. So it's what you should pay attention to.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. So tell me, what do you girls tend to do before, say, 9 o'clock in the morning? Do you have morning rituals or anything? Are there sort of, because I know that getting a good start to each day is so important. Do you have a process or a ritual that you each follow?
Yeah, it's a
Tasha's
probably quite
more
different.
Of a ritual than me.
Yeah, I used to be allergic to routine, but I'm finding more and more that if I don't do these things in the morning, then my day won't be as productive. So we have a little hill that is about, I don't know, a 45-minute round trip of going up and down. So I
is that the one in the video on your website?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
What an awesome view from up there.
Oh, it's spectacular and it never gets old. So I think at about 7:30 in the morning, I'll just get up, go straight up the hill, come down, and then it'll just put me in such a good mood and make me feel accomplished before the day's actually begun. And then I didn't used to be a coffee drinker, but now I am. So then I'll often get a coffee on my way to work, and then I'll feel like I'm, you know, in the zone and I can focus on what's happening, because I don't have this, oh, when am I going to move today? What's, like, I don't have this lethargic start to the day. So I think that's, like, if I'm going to set myself up for a winning day, that's probably how. And what I've realized is, you know, being in lockdown, I can't go up the hill because it's closed. And I was like, you know, meandering the first week and not really feeling motivated or feeling good. And ever since I've made my substitute little hill of little shuttles in the morning up a different baby hill, it's not as big, but it's still by the beach and it's really nice. It's just completely changed everything. Like, suddenly I'm stoked again and motivated, because it's such a – the way that you can get fresh air and start the day like that is just so powerful. So, yeah, I'm not as I'm a short burst kind of person. Viv is like athlete extraordinaire and does massive long training runs and crazy things that I would never do. So she's a bit different.
Mm-hmm. So what about you, Viv?
Yeah, I would say I lack routine. I remember someone asking, someone was telling me, I could tell you to the minute at, like, where in my house I'd be every morning. And I'm like, I am completely the opposite. I'll wake up at a different time. If the water's really clear, I might go for a swim, or if the surf's good, I'll surf. And then, or I'll, if I'm organized, I'll do my bike ride and stuff. Or if I'm not, then I'll end up doing it at like 7 o'clock at night. And I'm just all kind of over the show. But with that being said, in terms of business, that structure has been awesome. I just find that the activities I like to do often require a little bit of flexibility around what I feel like and what the conditions are, because I quite like to call myself a bit of a fair weather trainer. So I don't really swim if it's really choppy. I can't be bothered with that, or, you know, but I like to enjoy it. So it just depends what's happening, really.
I relate to both of those, because I had a period too where, you know, I said to people, don't bother me before 10:30 a.m. because I would work till 3 or 4 a.m. and then I would sleep in, and I'd be all over the shop too. And it worked for me for years. Now I love to be up at, you know, no later than 6 a.m. and actually go outside. I need to do what you do, Tash. I need to actually get out there and move straight away rather than wait until later, because I think you're right that you get that out of the way and you feel like you've already accomplished something. You've overcome inertia. You've gotten the blood flowing. You've gotten everything moving in the right direction. And then, you know, that anxiety and all concern about when am I going to move today is already gone. You've already dealt with it.
Totally. So everything's up from there. And I think that as well, of doing it because you know it's for the endorphins, is a really important thing, because I used to make myself run up the mountain every day because it was like a training thing. But ever since I've done it for the mood aspect and, you know, to be a better person, it's been, if I feel like walking, which is actually now most days, I'll walk. And if I feel like running, I'll run. And it's just, even if it just means, you know, walking to the beach and back, it's going through the motions, but I'm far more gentle on myself nowadays and I don't force myself to do various things. I'll just sort of try and be more in tune, but still get the benefit.
Mm. I think that makes a lot of sense. Do you know the guys, Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Fields Milburn, the minimalists?
Yeah.
You heard of them?
Yeah.
Joshua was a big fan of having a goalless life and simply charting a direction, and for lots of different reasons, a lot of which I relate to. And I think some of that speaks to what you're saying about being more gentle on yourself and not creating arbitrary, you know, rules around how you have to do something all the time. And you'd probably relate to this a lot more, Viv, that, you know, better to go with your intuition a lot of times, even though you might have very specific goals for your business or a very specific direction or outcome you seek, but being too regimented with yourself about, no, I have to do this every day at this time, and I have to do that at that time. And it can become very fatiguing and takes a lot of the joy out of life.
Yeah.
Which is what we're ultimately all aiming for, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bit like, you know, there's no point getting rich if, you know, you work 70 hours a week and you never see your family. It's like, well, what did you do it for?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I think we're coming to the end here. We've been chatting for, God, almost 50 minutes, and I've really, really enjoyed it. I've only got really two more questions for you. First one is, can you describe the environment where you feel most inspired, where new ideas tend to bubble up for you?
Yeah, I think mine would be almost what I was saying just before, is if I'm in fresh air, like walking often outside, or doing something creative. But usually if I'm outside and doing some form of not intense exercise, then that is where I get insight or time to think about various things. So yeah, I'd say that would be my answer.
What about you, Viv, in the ocean?
Yeah, mine's water-based. Mine's definitely water-based. Either, yeah, something that doesn't require a lot of thinking. Ocean swimming requires a bit more thinking sometimes, but, you know, if it was just in the pool or if it was surfing, that doesn't require so much. You know, you can chill out a little bit more then. It's probably like a little bit more meditative, I suppose. That's when I'll sort of figure stuff out, I think.
So how do you make notes while you're on your board?
A
waterproof phone.
Yeah, I suppose it's more. Working. Yeah, thinking something through, I suppose, and that's where new ideas kind of emerge and flourish as well.
It's interesting that you both say that your ideas come to you when you're engaged in something else, because I had this conversation with someone the other day about how I think if you can distract your conscious mind with something that you enjoy, then your subconscious starts to bubble up, and all these great ideas that you can't force through tend to come up freely because you're distracted with something else that you like. For me, it's driving. I get in my car and I go for a blast up the mountains, which I can't do at the moment, unfortunately. And ideas just come out like crazy, and I have my voice recorder app on my phone and I just brain dump into it, and then I'll get to somewhere else at the end in the mountains and I'll play it back and I'll make some notes. It's like, holy crap, why didn't I ever think of that before?
Yeah.
That's a brilliant idea. That's how Office Anywhere started. Office Anywhere started on a mountain drive, and then I got to a park by a lake and played this stuff back, and I thought, that's what I need to do. That's exactly what I need to do, because I was able to relax my thinking brain for long enough with the joy of driving that what I really wanted came out.
Yeah.
So I really relate to that. I'm very jealous of where you live, Tash. That view looks awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
Are you in that area too, Viv?
Yeah, I'm about four or 500 metres away from Tash, actually.
Such a beautiful place. Where is it? What is that
it's
place?
It's called Mount Maunganui. It's 2 or 3 hours south of Auckland, our main airport.
And it's just been highlighted so much in the last lockdown week of how lucky we are, because, you know, there's sometimes it's easy to think like, oh, it'd be so cool to live in a big city, and like it would be great. But when things like this happen, it's the best place to be, in this small pocket of paradise where you can walk to the beach still in lockdown conditions. So, yeah, very blessed at the moment.
And, you know, I think we're both blessed that we live in the countries that we do, because Australia and New Zealand are both doing so well. Jacinda Ardern is doing a brilliant job, even
she's
though
amazing.
It's, you know, hugely disruptive, I know. But she's an amazing woman. I listened to her doing a press conference yesterday when I was driving down to my mum's house, and I thought, she is so articulate and yet so human and so in tune with what people need to hear, and she's doing a brilliant job. I mean, the infection rate and the death rate in New Zealand is nothing compared to other countries.
Yeah, we've had
and
one
Australia's
person die.
Too.
Yeah.
I know.
She has that balance, which is so rare, of she can project so much empathy and humanness and feel on the same level as you, but also still be really a leader and authoritative, and you can feel that she's in charge.
Yes.
So it's such a, you know, it's a great balance on paper, but it's actually rare that you find it in a person. So, yeah, we're very blessed.
One thing
she is brilliant.
One thing I did notice come out of Aussie, and I'm not sure if that's something I didn't catch on to earlier, was the calling Scott Morrison ScoMo. Big fan of that. I thought that was just hilarious. Has that happened before? Or is it just
Aussie's always need a nickname for
everyone.
Sorry?
Yeah. It's like The leader of the opposition, his nickname is Albo. You know, it's like, I don't know, that's like a plumber's convention. Hey, ScoMo, Albo, come over here. It's time for Smoko.
Yeah, so funny. So funny. I've seen people use hashtag ScoMo and I just think it's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. This is what's good about us Aussies and you New Zealanders is we don't take ourselves too seriously. Yeah. And until we're faced with a crisis, then bloody all the powers that, you know, can be brought to bear on it are applied quickly, and that's why we're doing so well. All right, so I've only got one more question for you, and this one's not a big falutin philosophical one, is I've enjoyed chatting to you so much. I loved your workshop. I recommend everybody do your workshop. It is so brilliant to clear all of the crap that people are being taught about how to succeed on Instagram. Your workshop is brilliant. So where can people find more about you and about Ace the Gram?
The best place to start is obviously Ace the Gram podcast on any of your podcasting platforms, but I was also mentioning today too that I just updated the resources list on our website. So if you go to acethegram.com/resources, there's a guide to giveaways on there. There's a little bit of a guide on influencer marketing and some free tools that will help you get forward in your Instagram journey and save a bit of time. So if you like the sound of any of that, make sure you head over to acethegram.com/resources.
I saw your email come through on that. Brilliant stuff. Anything else, Tash, that you want to add?
No, that's all good. And thank you so much for your feedback on the course. It means a lot. And that is also on the website, just acethegram.com/workshops.
And that's a wrap. I think Tash actually meant to say acethegram.com/workshops, not the other way around. And I genuinely recommend that if you have any interest in upping your game on Instagram or at least demystifying the whole thing and how it works and what you should focus on and what you can ignore, then I highly recommend you go and do one of their courses, because the one I did, I think, was the beginner's one. I think it was the beginner one. And it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. I know I rave a lot about it, but it's not often I rave about other people's work. And I think you've really got to give credit where it's due. And, I mean, part of my job here with Office Anywhere has always been, and that's my phone, pardon that in the background, part of my job here with Office Anywhere has always been to try and demystify stuff and to help you to, I guess, cut through the crap to see what truly matters. And this has always been my goal with most of the things that I do, is to ask the question, what really matters here and what is the outcome that we seek? And I think Viv and Tash, for a couple of girls so young, really have a firm grasp on these essential elements of understanding why you're doing something, what it's all for, where it's leading to, and what you need to do to get there. And if it's Instagram, that's going to help you to get where you want to go. And with a billion people using it every day, I think it's pretty hard to ignore it. Well, then these girls are the people that you should turn to learn how to handle all of this stuff. Anyway, that's enough for us for this week. Thanks for hanging around with me again. I enjoy having you here tuning in. You'll find the post that goes along with this episode over at officeanywhere.co/104. And as always, till we chat again next time, here's to working and living on your terms. Catch you then. See ya.